It's Lifeline with Craig Roberts. He's the host of Northern California's longest-running conservative talk show. He's a man with a message, a conservative with compassion. He's Lifeline's own Craig Roberts.
Good afternoon, Northern California. Welcome. Just about 5 minutes after the hour of 5 p.m. as we welcome you to another edition of Lifeline. Keeping you company Monday through Friday at this time, as we typically do, addressing issues that impact your life, your world, and your Christian walk. Ever wonder what your kids are learning in school? Oh, I don't necessarily mean things such as the history of the country and how to read and write and things of that sort, all important to be sure, but what of the other things that they're learning in school? You know what I mean, Mom and Dad, the other things? School's in session, and some things are taking place that perhaps are going to shock parents. It is incumbent, I think, on all of us to understand, to help bridge the so-called generation gap and know what our kids are learning, how they're feeling, and ultimately, how they're being influenced by both their peers and even by the educators. With some insights to help us all wake up to the realities of what kids are learning both in and outside of school, Andy Brainerd joins us. He's a teen expert, author of an expose on teen sex and dating, what's really going on and how to talk about it, published by NAV Press. And Andy, thanks so much for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks for having me on the show.
Parents frequently certainly will focus on things like, are you getting your homework done? What are your grades look like? Things of this sort. All important issues, to be sure. And yet, it's what's not on the official curricula sometimes that we ought to most be worried about.
Right. I spent 2 years researching this book in the hallways of the high schools across America, and actually came up with some pretty alarming results. I found that there's an undercurrent of sexuality happening in our high schools today that is akin to the sexual revolution of the 60s, but it's all being done kind of under the radar. And so I would encourage parents, just like you said, there's a lot of things we can see that we expect kids to learn from school, but it's the relationships that they're having in the hallways of the high school, when school's over, on weekends, that we should really be concerned about.
All right, here's a fact check, reaching out to some of the FAQ that parents ought to be asking of their teens, or at least aware of. Let's begin with the first point that you address, and that is that there is significantly more sexual activity going on than most parents are aware of. In fact, according to a CDC study, half of high school students have had sexual intercourse, and 14%, I mean, you know, it's not far from being one out of every five, have had relations, physical relations, with four or more partners, and we're talking about kids still in high school?
Right. I was in a school, and I won't mention the name of the school, but I have a chance to go into some of these schools and do assemblies and talk to students about, you know, faith and what they're really thinking about faith and what they're thinking about life. And I commonly get a group of kids together just to ask about their dating relationships. And I just say, look, bottom line, you're not going to see me again in 3 days. So, you know, you can be honest with me, and I'm not going to go tell your parents what's going on. But tell me what's going on in the dating relationships in this high school. And as we're sitting around the table, one of the guys piped in, and he said, Andy, here at our school, it's just like we just hook up with each other, you know, every day. And so and hook up has a different meaning than maybe some parents might think that it is. They have a location that they'll go to, and they'll literally engage in physical activity, and when it's over, it's just kind of like they just kind of went and played basketball in the backyard. They they come back to school and they say, you know, they give each other high fives and wasn't that fun last night, and then the next night they do the same thing over and again. And so each night we have teenagers that are out just hooking up with each other,
and even worse, so not only is any sense of impropriety gone or shame or guilt apparently just completely cast aside, but then isn't it so that at certain levels, we see, Andy, the influence of so-called modern-day social media that is helping exacerbate all of this? Because now, you know, not only are the kids are hooking up, and then they're bragging about it on Facebook or texting each other, if not with the gory details, even with photographs.
With the gory details and photographs.
Wow.
It's unbelievable. unbelievable. In fact, I'll get emails from parents that sneak on their kid's computer and they'll download the latest Skype conversation that they're having, and it just makes you blush to think about the language that kids are using and the explicitness of what's going on.
So we've gone from being concerned about our kids potentially being exposed to pornography in the seedy parts of town to now actually creating the pornography.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
And most parents, I mean, as much as you talk to teens, you also talk to their parents. What's the reaction? I mean, you're speaking to upwards of 80,000, 100,000 teens every year. You have a lot of impact and opportunity to talk to the parents. When you share some of these details, much as we are here this afternoon, what's the reaction?
I find that there's a lot of parents who would come and they'd say, obviously they'd be in the camp to say, oh, that's not my kid. My kid would never do that. My kid would never be involved in that. And then you have some parents that say, okay, I see the issue. I see what you're doing now. What can we do to encourage our kids? And especially in the Christian communities, when I go in and start talking about dating and relationships, there are some honest parents that go, hey, look, we need help. We need folks that can bridge the gap between the teen relationship and the parent relationship. Help us coach our kids. And so, you kind of get both sides of the spectrum, but I tend to focus on the ones that are going, all right, we get it. We know our kids are not perfect. We know our kids could be involved in this. Teach me how to coach my kid to have a successful relationship in high school.
A lot of parents feel overwhelmed by this, a sense of perhaps being out of control because of the number of counter influences to what they're trying to teach their kids. I mean, I would assume parenting today is as it was when I was a kid, that most parents want to be able to set up an atmosphere in the household that establishes and then helps to encourage certain standards and standard for living, a moral code, et cetera, et cetera. Mine happened to come out of the church, but, you know, somehow some sort of a decent code of behavior that parents are not only having to compete with the counterculture that is out there that's running contrarian to what they're trying to teach their kids and values in the home or in church. And then on top of all of this, I bet there's a huge frustration because just parents feel as if there's little they can do.
Right, but I think it's easy sometimes for parents to just defer to all the other influences, but the research is showing us now when you ask kids about the most influential people in their life, in other words, what are the most prominent voices in your life today, the research that's come out say parents still hold the number one spot in developing a worldview of that teenager. And to most parents, I can say, you know, how many times have we been driving down the road with our kids in the back seat and we say something, our kids are acting up or something, and we say, be quiet, stop touching each other, and all of a sudden this memory of you being in that car kind of comes through and you remember your mom or your dad saying those things, all to point to the things that we learn about parenting often come from our parents. And so I often encourage parents to think about, if you have the number one influence in your child's life, and secondly is friendships, peer relationships, and then third, the research comes out and says that the media holds the third position. So if you've still got the number one spot, then it's time for parents to start really parenting. It's time for parents to really think about, you know, when is my kid on that computer, and who are they talking to on that computer, and who are they texting, you know, when they're at the dinner table, and start taking control and be a parent in your house. My goodness, you're still mom and you're still dad, and you have a responsibility to rise up and raise your kids.
If you've just joined the conversation, Andy Branner with us tonight, teen expert, author of an expose on teen sex and dating, what's really going on and how to talk about it. We'll come back to more of the insights and our conversation tonight. If you want to join us with a comment or a question, join in. Toll-free number is 888-FOR-KFAX. That's 888-367-5329. A timeout. Back with more as this edition of Lifeline continues.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
All right, welcome back to the conversation. Andy Branner with me tonight, guest expert on teens, author of a new book called An Exposé on Teen Sex and Dating, What's Really Going On and How to Talk About It. You know, one of the other big shockers here, I think, for a lot of parents is the amount of alcohol and drug abuse going on. There was a Department of Health and Human Services substance abuse report that came out that found that over a quarter of teens, 25%, have engaged in alcohol abuse under the age of 21, and 17% have gotten engaged in so-called binge drinking. There are folks listening to this program right now, Andy, who have never binged drank in their life, let alone doing it before the age of 18.
Yeah. Those are the old teenage adages, right? If we can only get them to stop drinking and stop smoking weed and stop having sex, then everything will be fine. But what we found is that those are just merely a veneer. All those issues, those classic teenage issues, are just those are the surface issues of something deeper going on. And what we find those things to be true out here, we've got a little place called Kivu out in Colorado. We have over 1,000 students every summer that come out here to do adventures in Colorado. And during that time, we get a chance to really live life with students. And so what we find is that most students that are just trying to make their journey through high school are struggling with significance. And it might not just be a teen issue. It could be, it's probably just all of us, right? We all want to feel valuable. We all want to feel significant. We all want to feel like we've got somebody that'll listen to us. And the more that I find kids that are engaged in activities, as you mentioned, the more I find somebody crying out going, who in this world is going to value me? Mm. Who's going to be with me? And I would say, and I say this every time I get in front of an audience, the number one issue in the teenage world today is not drinking, it's not sex, it's not drugs. The number one issue is loneliness. They're walking through life and they just feel all alone.
You know, and the amazing thing to that message is that's kind of the description of the human condition overall, isn't it?
That's it. Yeah, that's it. And I find the more that I can, when I bend down to look a student in the eye and I give them the value that they deserve as being human, all of a sudden their eyes light up and they think, oh, wow, somebody cares for me. And if they can do that at home, if a mom and a dad can do the parenting thing in a way that they really invest time in the things that teenagers like to do, and they really focus on valuing their student. Sure, there's disciplinary things. Surely there's correction things. Surely there are issues where we have to get in and mentor and coach. But when I place value in my teenager, he longs to be with me. He wants to be with people that find him valuable.
And it goes back to the old age-old adage that oftentimes the best thing that you can do to sort of inoculate your kids against all that the world has to offer out there is just to spend some time with them. And if you use the excuse, oh, but I'm putting in 60-hour work weeks and earn enough money so we can take the big vacations and live in the bigger house, I'm doing it all for my kids. In the end, you're going to find out that the opposite effect of what you were hoping for comes to fruition.
That's it. And I tell parents a lot, you know, when my kids got to the age where they could do Legos and they started stacking Legos, they would sit in the living room for hours just stacking these things and making these different concoctions of Lego buildings and stuff. And I got to tell you, Craig, I hate Legos. I just don't think that way. I have no patience. I can't put the 6-block with the 4-block with the 2-block. But it was the times that I sat in the living room and said, you know what? Even though I don't like doing this, I know you love it, and to spend time with you, I'm going to do the thing that you like to do. Those were the relationships where relationships started being made. That's when they started seeing, hey, Dad really cares about us because he wants to spend time doing what we want to do. So I encourage parents all the time, you know, if you can find that thing, if it's video games, don't just turn the Xbox off. Maybe sit down with your kid and say, hey, teach me how to do this. I'd love to do this with you. And get into their world. And once you get into their world, then these conversations about drinking and drugs and sex and relationships at school and academics and all the different things that they're involved in start just bubbling forth without you even really having to ask any real hard questions.
You're not suggesting to try to be a peer or a friend. I mean, you can be a friend to your kids, but, you know, your kids will have plenty of friends in their lifetime. They're only going to have one mother and one father.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I think the friendship thing is a different term maybe than I want to invest my time where you find time. And I'm going to show value to you the way that you need to feel valued. And if we can do that, man, I'm telling you, it changes the way parents and teenagers interact together.
Let's grab a couple of calls here. We're going to go to Lori in San Jose. Lori, come on in with your comment or question for my guest tonight, Andy Brenner.
Hi. I have taught high school and different age group students, and I found that, sex is a big problem as far as, you know, student-student interactions becoming more casual. But does your book address, faculty becoming involved in promoting sexuality, like what Governor Brown did and the legislature did as far as SB 48.
Yeah, and you know, and even the bigger equation there, Lori, is the fact that we've seen so much of almost substitute parenting going on in the classroom. And some of it, I think, to be fair, Andy, a few parents kind of fell on their swords, didn't do their job. And then some, I think, well-meaning but over-enthusiastic folks at the educational level said, well, look, if the parents are not going to teach their kids right from wrong and sex education, we'll take care of that for them. The problem is, you know, fast forward 40 years after so-called sex education made its way into the classroom, now all of a sudden it's moved from, you know, just good health information to suddenly promoting an agenda. Andy?
Right. So the book, to speak to your question directly, Lori, the book does not address the public school's responsibility or not responsibility. So I'll speak just off the cuff in the research that I found. It speaks more to what Craig was talking about. We see administrators all over the country who are standing up saying we need sex education in the classroom, and we find parents that are trying to opt out of those things in a way that they say, hey, it's our responsibility, we're going to teach them. Well, let me just give you a little story. We had a guy that was sending his kid out to our place here in Colorado, and he said, are you guys going to teach sexuality out there? And I said, well, yeah, we have a whole course on dating and sexuality as it relates to the Christian worldview, and what is God's intention for us in developing a relationship. Well, the man was well-intentioned on the other end of the phone, and he said, well, I'd like my daughter to opt out of that class. And I said, well, that's great, because we don't want to do anything that offends parents. We want to make sure we're locking arms with parents. We want to do what you want to do. I said, could you tell me a little bit, like, why? Why don't you want her in that class? And he said, well, we're gonna teach her those things at home, and we just want to reserve that conversation. To which I responded, incredible. That's incredible. That's a great idea. Thanks for being good parents. And then I said, if you don't mind, might I ask, how old is your daughter when she's coming out here? I'd just like to know, you know, where she's going to fit in, where she's going to play, how we can identify her. He said, well, she's 15 years old. To that I said, brother, I don't mean to step on your toes, but that ship has already sailed.
Yeah, you're going to have the conversation? Yeah, well, you should have been thinking about that probably 8 years ago.
Our research shows that the average first sexual experience happens at 12 years old.
Yep. There you go. And that is the stark reality that I think a lot of parents need to deal with. You know, even as we think about how we were parented, Andy, and wish to apply some of those lessons to how we in turn become parents and parent our own kids, we got to realize this clock is moving faster than any of us realize.
It's fast, and that statistic of 12 years old means that 50% of them parents are younger than 12. And so we've got to, if we're going to stand up and take the mantle of teaching our kids about sexuality, then we've got to start those conversations, as awkward as they might seem, earlier and earlier.
Some good insights. If they want to get copies of the book, Andy, it's available, I would imagine, through your website as well as Amazon.com.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Amazon.com, AndyBrainer.com is my website, or you can just flip over to NavPress.com and you can go down to the teenage section and it's highlighted there.
All right, an expose on teen sex and dating, what's really going on and how to talk about it. Information again on Andy's website at AndyBrainer, AndyBrainer.com. Andy, thanks for the time and the insight.
On smart speakers and the Odyssey. A service of Salem Media Group.
The IRS is the most powerful collection agency on earth, and if you owe back taxes, the news isn't good. The IRS is raising the interest rate it charges on unpaid taxes, and further rate hikes are expected. Most people don't know it, but the IRS adds interest charges to your tax debts daily. So if you owe the IRS today, you'll owe even more tomorrow. And it doesn't stop until you get right with the IRS. The good news is getting right can start with one phone call to Optima Tax Relief, America's number one tax relief firm. Optima's tax professionals specialize in the Fresh Start Initiative, a powerful IRS program that can save you thousands if you qualify. In fact, the experts at Optima have resolved over $1 billion in tax debt for their clients. Call now for a free consultation.
Call 800-965-1433. 800-965-1433. 800-965-1433.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
This is Alistair Begg, inviting you to join me on the Deeper Faith Cruise to Canada and New England this coming September. Together, we'll be studying from God's Word, enjoying Christian fellowship, and all the while taking in the beautiful fall scenery. It looks like it'll be a terrific adventure, and I hope that you'll come along. You can learn more and book your ticket online at deeperfaithcruise.com or call 855-565-5519.
Dad, why do your toenails look like that?
Hey, it's James, and if you're like me and suffer from toenail fungus, please pay close attention. Let's face it, toe fungus is embarrassing. I was afraid to take my socks off and hid my ugly toes from everybody. But nail fungus isn't just a cosmetic problem. It can also be dangerous. Even a small spot can spread and get worse. But no matter what I tried, it seemed like my fungus would never go away. Then I discovered Crystal Flush, the new and different FDA-registered at-home treatment. This unique two-step system flushes out fungus at its source and reverses damaged nails. Finally, me and thousands of others are free from fungus, and you can be too. Call now, and for a limited time, you can try Crystal Flush risk-free for 30 days. Call 800-354-1862. That's 800-354-1862. Eliminate your toe fungus once and for all, guaranteed. Call now, 800-354-1862. Or visit crystalflush.com.
This is Dennis Prager. Now you can listen to my show when it's convenient for you and without censorship from big tech. Become a member of the ultimate online community for all things Prager. It's Pragertopia Unlimited. Listen to the show on demand when it's easiest for you. This includes every radio show, every segment, and every guest over the last 10 years, and it's commercial free. You can even share your favorite segments with your friends. Plus, you'll get the same email from Alan Estrin that I receive every night about the most important issues to read about. Pragertopia Unlimited members can also listen to every program, lecture, and course that is in the Prager store. Thousands of hours. You can even listen to all my Torah teachings for free. Share my passion for free speech. Join today and save 25% off the first year and get a free Pragertopia coffee mug. It's all things Prager, Pragertopia Unlimited. Go to pragertopia.com or click the banner at DennisPrager.com.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
If you were to take a snapshot or a profile of Americans, certainly I think it can be said that we have a love of our cars, a love of our technology, we love our entertainment, and we certainly love our sports. In fact, in many respects, the love of sports as a pastime seems to be in many ways uniquely American. Now, there are sports like soccer, which certainly are international. Baseball seems to be fairly global, as to perhaps basketball, but Football is uniquely American. We enjoy our sports because it's a time of diversion, entertainment. It's big business. It's athletic skill, character building, and role modeling. Well, perhaps more accurately put on those last two points, we seem to see less and less of role modeling and character building in professional sports today. And that's a growing concern, especially in a day and an age when so many young people are so yearning to have role models in their lives. Joining me today in studio is Jim Grassi. Jim is the founder and president of Men's Ministry Catalyst. He is the author of a number of best-selling, award-winning books, born and raised in the Bay Area, and he's got a brand new book out on the topic of football and faith called Guts, Grace, and Glory. And Jim, it's always great to have you with us.
It's always a pleasure to be here at KFAX and to see you, Greg. We've been around together for many years.
We have indeed.
Shared microphones before.
We have indeed, and a pleasure to do it with you again today on this important topic, and one that I think, Jim, is getting more and more attention, this issue of professional sports and what's happening in the arena of professional sports. And sadly, not all of that attention is good attention. Now, most recently, just to quickly address the sort of elephant in the room, has been the protest that began here, as we all know, in San Francisco, with the 49ers, Colin Kaepernick protesting some of the issues concerning what's happened in places like Charlottesville and certainly in Ferguson. And to be sure, we have a lot to be worked on in the arena of police relations with minority communities, race relations at the broader level. There's a lot taking place there, too. But that said, there's also, I think, this looming issue within professional sports that it isn't what it used to be. And by that, I mean anybody that's been around the game for more than a while and knows names like Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle and Johnny Unitas and Babe Ruth and Willie Mays can certainly understand that there seems to have been in the last 15, maybe 20 years, a major paradigm shift. It's remained America's favorite pastime, to be sure, but what's happening to the character building, the role modeling within the industry, and maybe there's the operative word, it's become America's industry, seems to say a lot. If it's true, as I said in my opening remarks, Jim, that a lot can be said about or learned about America because of our interests and our pastimes, then I would suppose, too, when we kind of pull the curtain back on professional ball these days, it says a lot about who we're becoming, and it's not a good reflection.
Oh, that's for sure, Craig. And as a student of the game and a person that has been associated with football from the inside a little bit, I served in the capacity as chaplain for the Raiders for a number of years, for the 49ers for a year, have had deep relationships with another number of NFL coaches and players. I say that as background to say this. You nailed it when you said about 20 years ago, because I started this work with my chaplaincy with various sports teams just about 25 years ago. And the character I saw trying to be portrayed among players at that time is different than what I see today. I'm still connected at some level with some coaches and some teams, and I occasionally speak to the entire team about this issue of character. In fact, I know it sounds like an oxymoron, and for those listeners that would think that the Oakland Raiders would have a chaplain and character coach, that was my official title given to me by John Gruden when he was coach. But they say I failed at my job.
But it challenges, at least.
It's challenges. Sure. But, you know, not to put everybody into the same light. Within the NFL, all the teams, and I'll speak specifically NFL, they've done the Giants and Colorado Rockies at one time. They have chaplains, and they have chapels that the men attend, and there's some real men of great character and faith, the Steve Wisniewskis of the world, the Rich Gannons, people that I had the privilege of getting to know, the Napoleon Kaufmans and folks like that, that really want to embrace and become those men, those strong men of faith and character, as role models for their teammates and for the community. But what we remember with the Joe DiMaggio's, the Willie Mays's, and the Johnny Unitas's and all that, there used to be a sense of pride and ownership among the men about being a good role model. And certainly there were the exceptions back in those days, but I have before me a list that I did for this show of research. Since 2000, in the NFL, there's been 656 arrests of NFL players. And by team, the worst team, believe it or not, is the Minnesota Vikings with 42 arrests, and all the way down to the St. Louis Rams, now the L.A. Rams, with 8 arrests. But the reality is that you know, people are coming into football with a different mindset and background. Today, my unofficial research in the NFL is of the teams I've spoken to, roughly 70 to 75% of the men did not have a father, a biological father in the home when they grew up. And so they did not have a sense of values and stewardship of their gifts and talents that, you know, we assumed is common among athletes.
So you're really seeing then a breakdown, or the results or the impact of the breakdown of the nuclear family.
That's right.
And sadly then, you're seeing sports become more and more of a reflection, pro sports, more of a reflection of what's happening in society
as a whole.
And so the respect factor, the honor factor, the stewardship factor of what character is, and maybe we want to even define that for our listeners, those things are not a given. And hence they have a person like myself come in and talk to the men about character and character development, protecting the legacy of the sport, of your name, of your family. I remember I was at a 49er training camp when Coach Mariucci asked me, you know, to speak to the whole team. And obviously, in the role as a, quote, character coach, I have to be more generic, but I bring in the faith aspect because, to me, you can't deny that. But I had one athlete come up after, and he said, Dr. Grassi, what makes you think that I asked to be a role model? And I go, well, man, you know, he said, I didn't ask for this. And I said, by virtue of what you do, you are a role model. The question isn't whether you're a role model or not. The question is, what kind of role model are you going to be? And how do you want to be remembered? What's the legacy you want? And part of the thing I do with the teams during these moments is I have newspaper article after newspaper article of various athletes who've stumbled and failed miserably, shootings, murders, and whatnot. And I bring up these names, and I says, these guys, many of them were all pro players, and they're not going to be remembered for their statistics or things when you remember Ray Lewis or other players, people that I could name. I mean, there's a host of them. You immediately go to what they did that they're remembered for. And that's what I try to communicate to these young men that are so impressionable and have the resources and the networks and everything that they can get lost in this whole maze of sin.
And I think there's a broader lesson there, too, Jim, for all of us to say that if you were elected president of the United States, you could argue that, you know, I didn't sign up for the job that says I have to be awoken right at 2 o'clock in the morning because some fight has broken out in a country 10,000 miles away that might not even have been interest to the United States. And yet the president of the United States has a responsibility. Every job comes with its responsibilities. And that's some good. We can embrace, like the responsibility of picking up my paycheck every two weeks, and others we say, guess what? It is just part of the job. And that leads us to, I think, an important point that I want to come back to after we take a brief time out. And that is what seems to also be a major paradigm shift in attitude, and that observation you just shared uniquely points to this, as to how the players see themselves. Today, it could probably be argued that most of them simply see themselves as famous, as opposed to intrinsically seeing themselves first and foremost as role models. Let's come back to that point. Jim Grassi is with us today in the studio, the founder and president of Men's Ministry Catalyst. And you can get information, by the way, on the web at mensministrycatalyst.org. That's mensministrycatalyst.org. Jim, as he mentioned, is the former chaplain with the San Francisco 49ers, the Oakland Raiders, authored a number of best-selling books, including his most recent book, Guts, Grace, and Glory. A brief time out, back with more as our conversation with Jim Grassi continues here on Lifeline.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Welcome back to the program. We are pleased to have with us today in studio Dr. Jim Grassi, founder and president of Men's Ministry Catalyst, author of a number of best-selling books, including his most recent book, Guts, Grace, and Glory. And Jim, we've been drawing some parallels here between what's happening in America today, culturally, socially, morally, and how that in many respects, sports are a reflection on who we are as a people. And if that be the case, what we're seeing in the mirror these days is not all that encouraging. You mentioned some of the greats, Bart Starrs, the Johnny Unitases, the Joe Namaths, on the baseball side, people like Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio, others, that young people of America, and as we were growing up, we looked up to these figures. We saw them for not only their incredible prowess on the gridiron or on the diamond, but also for who they were as role models. Sadly, it seems as if, and reason with me, is this true from your perspective, from your vantage point, are more and more of these players today seeing themselves less as role models and more just as famous people? Is that part of the problem?
Well, I think it even goes beyond that, Craig. I think people, a lot of athletes today, not all of them, but see themselves as entertainers. And, you know, I submit this to you, Craig. If I have a broken leg, would I go to my dentist to ask how to fix my leg?
Yeah, probably not a good idea.
Or would I go to my plumber or my mechanic to ask how to fix my leg? You see? And yet, some people in sports today see that they've been given a God-given platform, because we know all gifts, all our talents, all our abilities come from God. And they think this platform gives them the right to use that platform to tell me about politics, to tell me about respecting the flag, to tell me about whatever. Now, I look at it this way. If KFAX were to pay me a check monthly for services to do the great job you do, and I just want to do a sidetrack. No one's paid me to say this. I've had the privilege in doing books and radio and television interviews for 20-plus years, and you are the best interviewer I've ever had.
Well, thank
and
you,
I mean that, and I hope the audience is appreciative. All they have to do is go outside their universe here, and they would see that you are truly a gifted person that way. But coming back to the topic, the reality is if KFAX are paying me a check, okay, they are not paying me to give my viewpoints on things other than what they're paying me for. Now, can I, outside the KFAX radio station, give my viewpoints on things? Most definitely. I'm all for free speech. I'm all for unity among the races. I'm all for men standing up for what they believe. I'm all for that. But I do not, I feel it is a disrespectful thing to take a platform that was given to you, that you earned, that you worked for, but nevertheless that you have a respect and right to the ownership who's paying you to represent what you do. In this case, it's football. I'm not going to go to a football player and ask him how to fix my broken leg. Okay, and I think that we're seeing a reaction. I just got out of a meeting this morning talking with a pastor who asked me about this, because I've done so many books on the subject of football and faith and all this kind of stuff and using football's metaphor. I have literally this binder that is in front of you right now is a stack of emails and media stuff that's come to me about the question, this very question that we're dealing with right here, and looking for an answer to this profound and confusing thing. How can an athlete disrespect our flag and be paid for that? And it's okay with the NFL, according to their most recent position, that they do that.
Well, and I think the other thing, even deeper to this, and I realize that this tends to hit a raw nerve, and on the broader topic of the challenges that we as a country are facing in terms of racial relations these days, it is a raw nerve, and understandably so. I mentioned to you off the air a couple of weeks ago, I had dinner with Pam Tebow, that is Tim Tebow's mother. And, of course, a very strong family. Both of Tim's parents been involved in the missions field. In fact, Tim was raised in the Philippines when his dad was working there as a missionary. So they are strong, solid evangelical believers. And I asked her opinion on this topic of what do you think about the fact that we're seeing these protests across the country taking a knee, and yet when your son took a knee in prayer or in showing gratefulness to God for a victory on the gridiron for the touchdown, and scoring that he was absolutely eviscerated in the press and was forbidden from doing that action, taking that knee by the NFL, and the disingenuousness of all of this, that one is acceptable, but suddenly the other one is not. One seems to be politically correct in this moment in time, and the other one, well, let's face it, Christianity is not all that much in fashion anymore in this pluralistic society where more and more it seems that secular humanism is reigning supreme.
Yes, and I've had a couple NFL coaches call me and that I correspond with and talk to on a weekly basis because they have members of their team coming up going, "Coach, I don't believe in what a couple of players are doing, and my dad served or I served, and I'm having real difficulty." And what happened, it's become a distraction. And, you know, the NFL owners are trying desperately to put this thing behind them, but the social media is not allowing them to do it.
Well, and part of the problem, I think, here, too, Jim, is the fact that this is a valid discussion point. America should be engaged in this dialogue.
Right.
But instead of being engaged in the dialogue of what's happening in race relations and in the relations that minority communities are experiencing with civil authorities, police, so on and so forth, instead of getting that dialogue going, we have half the country that says, let him go ahead and take a knee, and the other half of the country that says, wait a minute, I have a father who served, a grandfather who served, I served, others that I know that maybe even died on the battlefield, and they see the national anthem, the flag, as symbols of who we are as a country and what we should be working toward. I mean, the irony is that we should see those symbols not of something to act in defiance toward, but rather say, this represents what we should be striving for. Listen, the Declaration of Independence, the phraseology of all men created equal, was done so at a time when slavery was still allowable and still accepted and still legal in this country. Our national viewpoint did not really sync up with the ideals that we established the nation on. So what did we have to do as a people? Over the course of the next 100 years, and it's sad it took that long, but over the course of the next 100 years, we had to work toward righting that wrong. And I think seeing the goal that we need to work toward is where our focus should be.
Yep.
And sadly, that message has got lost amongst the din of the politicizing of all of this.
And that's my point exactly. I hope your listeners will know it. First of all, I grew up in East Oakland during the time of the race riots, and yet our ministry works with hundreds of African-American pastors in the Oakland area, trying to help them to reach the men in their community to help them, because many of these men do not have biological fathers in the home. And I believe that's what bothers me most, Craig, about this whole thing, is that this has been a distraction to what could happen off the field. You know, people, we'd all agree that we live in a broken country. You and I are broken. We're not perfect role models every day. You know, we strive to be, but we aren't. We're all broken. But the reality is that with all that's going on in this world today, we need some releases. And you and I would agree that number one release needs to be in Christ Jesus and through His Word. But secondly, sports has been a release for people. Watching guys who are very gifted and very loved do their thing out on the field on Sunday or Saturday or during the week, like yesterday with the Warriors, we love that. So now we don't have that as a relief, you might say, and the tensions are building in this country. I've never seen this country more angry, more discouraged, more frustrated, more down and out than it is today. And I'm not saying sports is a cure-all, but let's not take that area that we used to see as kind of an area where we could relax to now bring up all the issues going on. I'm a firm believer, and I know KFAX is with their upcoming seminar on unification. The word is unity. You know, you mentioned our past heritage. George Washington said this: unity of government is important to the citizens of the United States because unity supports our independence, our peace, safety, prosperity, and liberty. And I'm amazed at the number of times as I prepared for this show, the number of times the word unity comes up in Scripture. Paul, in numerous letters, talks about unity. Christ, in a Great Commission, what does he talk about? He talks about that we should love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and all thy mind, all thy soul, all thy spirit, all our being. And then he says, but the second thing is equally important, to love your neighbor. And I think the conversation has to come back. How do we love and respect one another as human beings? It doesn't matter what our skin color is. It doesn't matter that we should be focusing on the past and our breakdowns of the past, that we need to focus on our future and what we can do to build a stronger country, to be more unified. It's interesting to me, the word unity, it starts with you and I. Unity, right?
Yes.
And community, from the word unity, is in community. And so you and I are in community. Okay, and the first three letters of community is what? Command, C-O-M, come, which is translated as command. So it's a command of God through his word that we should be unified in spirit and thought. And so when we have these distractions that touch portions of our heart and spirit that are so important, because there's been people and our background and relatives to the flag and all that, it's a distraction from where we should be talking.
Indeed so. And so sadly then, instead of a dialogue about what we need to work on, how we need to come together, how we need to tear down these walls that divide us and address these very legitimate concerns, instead, we're debating whether or not it's disrespectful, and
right,
we run off suddenly. The conversation runs off the rails. Dr. Jim Grassi with us today in studio. He is the founder and president of Men's Ministry Catalyst, the author of a number of best-selling books, his latest, Guts, Grace, and Glory. Information on the web at mensministrycatalyst.org. That's mensministrycatalyst.org. A timeout, back with more as Lifeline continues.
In the darkest night, even the smallest light shines bright.
Remember, we are called to be salt and light.
AM 1100 KFAX San Francisco and at oneplace.com.